I cannot wait to share with you Exodus. You know, when we approach the Bible, you know, many people thought Bible has answer for every problem that we face. So this is the answering book. You have depressions? Come here. God has the answer for depressions. You have problem with your spouse, your wife and husband? There is answer right here. In fact, there is an alphabetical of problems, or issues. And then they have all the Bible verses that can address the issues. There is a book like that. I have one at home. Alphabetical order, so you can look up, you know, my problem. And then there's an answer to that. There's an answer to that. But that is not what the Bible is. Bible is not a modern-day counseling handbook. It's not a code of moral and ethical propositions. Bible is itself, is a God's self-revelations. It's a book about God's self-revelation. This is how we know God. This is how we know God. Through the Bible. Through the Bible. Exodus is one such event that people for generations and generations can point to and said that is who God is. So it's not just story, because in the story that we come to know who God is. So I hope by reading the Exodus, that you have a fresh eyes on God. And even be surprised by his self-disclosure. So we are going to go to chapter 3. Now, chapter 1 and 2 sort of kind of lay the background for this story. And they talk about Israelites who migrated from the land, the promised land, the land of Canaan, migrated to Egypt. How did they do? Why did they do that? Because there's a famine. So they have nothing to eat, and Egypt has lots of grain. So they came to Egypt. And also, by the way, Joseph, who is the son of Jacob, who became the prime minister of Egypt. So it's naturally, he took his whole family, 70 people, all the way from Canaan to Egypt. And so they stay in Egypt. 400 years later, there are millions of them. And they are just, you know, God bless them, and then they are just multiplying and multiplying. So the Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, was afraid of them. It says, what happened if they raise up and rebelled? You know, our country is going to be taken over by the Jews, by the Hebrews. So what he did is that he did like every authoritarian government will do, oppress them, give them more work to do, make them slave. So they were in Egypt 400 years, but we were talking about it, is that they were probably not slave until the last maybe 100 years. 100 years they were slave, but the prior 300 years they were sort of like the citizens of Egypt. They were living in Egypt by themselves, you know, because no Egyptian wants to have anything to do with shepherds. So they were by themselves. Only about the last 100 years before the Exodus, that they were oppressed. They were made slaves to build palaces, monuments for the pharaohs. So this is the background. And then Moses was born. Moses was born when Pharaoh decreed that all male infant shall be killed. And Moses' mother hid him in a basket, pushed him onto Nile River. Hopefully that will give him a chance to survive. And wouldn't you know it, the basket flew right in front of the Pharaoh's daughter. Pharaoh's daughter opened up and saw this little boy and then had compassion on him. She knew it was a Hebrew boy. So when she decided to keep him, she is actually going against her father's order. But nevertheless, you know, she's a princess, so what is father going to do? So, but what even more amazing the story goes is that Moses' older sister were watching what would happen to the basket, what would happen to her infant brother. And so Pharaoh's daughter received this baby, and Marian is her name, went over to the princess, says, "Do you want somebody to nurse this baby for you? I got somebody just in mind." You know, amazing. Oh, and the Pharaoh's daughter says, "Sure, go find somebody. I'll pay you to nurse this baby." So who do you think that Marian got Moses' nurse? His mother. So she brought Moses back to her mother, his mother, back to his mother, and his mother nursed him with no fear of being killed, because this baby belongs to Pharaoh's daughter, and getting paid at the same time. Wow, you can't get better than that. This is God's design. So this is what happened when Moses grew and he went back to the palace, because he belongs to Pharaoh's daughter. So they gave the boy back to Pharaoh's daughter, and so he grew up basically in palace, you know, in luxuries. Okay. But he knew that he is Hebrew, because he identified himself to be with the Hebrew people. And then that's when he went out, he saw a Egyptian slave driver mistreat a Hebrew, his brother. So he secretly killed this Egyptian guy. And then Moses discovered that this thing, this murder that he committed, was known. So the Pharaoh trying to kill him, trying to capture him. So he fled. He fled to the wilderness. He went to the wilderness, got married, become a shepherd. Become a shepherd and living a comfortable life. Doesn't have to be worried too much, you know, and he just have to worry about his sheep. So he stayed in the wilderness 40 years. Chapter 3 begins when, after 40 years, God confronted him. So that's the background. Moses was a shepherd for 40 years. He is now 80 years old, because when he left Egypt, he was about 40. And when, now plus 40 years in the wilderness, he's 80 years old. I'm 80 years old. I think he's still young. But most of the places 80 years old is, you know, you are already qualified to be senior discount. 80 years old. This is when God came to him. And this is when God says, "Moses, you are ready. You are ready to do what I'm assigning you to do." 80 years old. We're going to talk about that. Why take an old man to Egypt, right? A young man would be more useful, more energy. But no, God uses an old man. Okay, so let's read portion by portion, verse 1 to verse 4. This is what I call the call of Moses, how God called him. Now Moses, this is Exodus chapter 3, verse 1 to 4. You guys all have Bible, right? Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. So from the record, at least, we see that for the 40 years in the wilderness, Moses did not seem to have a relationship with the Lord, with God. You know, he just does his thing, shepherding. And it seems like this is the, after 40 years, this is the first time that the Lord spoke to Moses and called his name. I mean, when God is not present, doesn't mean that he is absent. The absent does not mean that he is not there. A lot of time in your life, right? You don't feel that God is there with you. You don't feel like, he knows what you're going through. But he does. But he does. He's there. He's always there. And even though 40 years, we say, wow, what a waste of time. 40 years, you know. But you know, God is, no time is wasted in the Lord. 40 years, Moses learned to be humble. Before that, he thinks that he can save Israel. He has a sense of self-righteousness. So, he killed the Egyptians. But now, 40 years later, he told God later, I couldn't even speak. I don't have the strength. I don't have the power. He learns to be humble. And also, I think when he was in the palace, everybody catered to his needs. You know, he's a prince in a way. He lives in the palace. Whatever he wants, he gets. But now, as a shepherd tending sheep, he has to look out for the sheep all the time. So he's not looking, he has nobody serving him, but he's learned to be a servant to the sheep. And that's a 40 years lesson that he learned. That he learned. So 40 years is not wasted. For God, 40 years is where God mold him and shape him to be an instrument for his use. And this use is right here, a few days, that he confronted the Pharaoh. He is ready for the master to use. Because for 40 years, God has been chipping away at his rough edges. Chipping away at his rough edges. I think the takeaway from this is that God is always working in our lives, right? In and around us. And he's always molding you and shaping you, molding your character to prepare you for something that he plans to do through you. Plans to do through you. Maybe just to reach out to a one person. Maybe it's molding and shaping you for greater things. But nevertheless, your life is not meaningless. God is shaping, forming you to do certain things, to be a certain people, to be a certain person. And when you become God's person, then God can use you in any way he wants, any shape he wants. But he has to first mold you to be that person. And that's what God did with Moses for 40 years. I mean, it takes 40 years. I hope God doesn't use you when you're 80 years old. But you have to be sensitive. Allow God to work in your life. So let's read from verse 5 to verse 7 and continue on. This is when God shared his plan with Moses. He calls him, and then now he shared his plan. Verse 5. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandal, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God says, I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God in this mountain. Moses said to God, suppose I go to Israelites and said to them, the God of your father has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? Then what should I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name by which I am to be remembered from generations to generation. Go, assemble the elders of Israel and said to them, the Lord, the God of your father, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob appeared to me and said, I have watched over you and have seen what has been done to you in Egypt. And I have promised to bring you up out of your misery in Egypt into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, Jebusites, a land flow with milk and honey. Okay, this is God's plan. I had trouble with some of God's plan. I don't know if you do. And sometimes you just read it and say, oh, okay, that's fine. That's God's plan. I have no problem with it. I agree. But do you know, first of all, I mean, this is just my objections to God's plan. There are people already living there. He tells you who they are, right? Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. A lot of people are already there. They build their home there. They plant their vineyard there. They have fig trees. Now God says, hey, I'm going to kick them all out and then replace them with you. I'm going to give this land to you. collateral damage? Come on! When you read, don't you have a sense of righteousness and justice? It says, what is this? It's a land grab. It's a land grab. You have no problem with it. Okay, fine. You have no problem with that. Okay. And he keep repeating who he is, right? He keep repeating. He's I am the God of your father. I'm God of Abraham. I'm God of Isaac. I'm God of Jacob. He did it at least three times in this, you know, I can tell you verse 6, verse 15 and 16. Okay, so what is God? We talk about Bible as being self-revelation, right? What is God revealing himself here? What is he saying here? And then, don't you have an issue with verse 12? You know, this says, God says, I will be with you, right? And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. That will be a sign for you. I thought sign is for me when I don't know God's will. Right? I ask God, give me a sign so I know for certain. So I know for certain. Because I don't have faith. So God, give me a sign to help my faith. To believe this is what you said. Or believe this is what you are sending me to do. That's before you happen, right? You ask for sign. But verse 12 says, after you've done everything, then this is the sign. Why would you need a sign after the fact? Right? I mean, at least our definition of sign. We say we want a sign so we know for certain the future. If something's already happened, why do I need a sign? What does the sign mean? Why do you need a sign? What does God even give you a sign? Yes, Andrew? A reminder, very good, he's very close. It's very close. But it's a sign. It's a sign. Not for Moses, not even for Israel. Because we say you had to look at the Exodus not as a rescue mission. Because if you're only looking at the rescue missions, and then the mission ends when they got out of Egypt, right? It's not that. Exodus is God revealing himself by building a nation out of ragtag of tribes. He is doing that. It's not just take them out of Egypt, even though, you know, all the flash and all the show is in Egypt. That's what you saw in the movies. But God's will is much bigger for generations. We'll take one at a time. But first of all, I think when God revealed himself to Moses, when God speaks to Moses, Moses knows exactly it is God who's speaking. Not his wife, not his friend, not his mentor, not his father-in-law, not your pastor, not your brother or sisters, not your parents. You know it is God who's speaking. So Moses knows God right away, because it is God who's speaking, because God told him, you are on the holy ground. Take off your sandal. You are on the holy ground. So Moses, at that moment, knows it is God who is speaking to him. Because whenever God where God is, that place is holy. So Moses knew, and he hid his face from God. Moses knew God is speaking to him. And then God identified himself as who? As I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. He stopped there. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. What's so significant about this three person where God specifically mentioned them? Well, how many sons does Abraham have? But there are two main ones. There's Ishmael, born by Hagar, and then there is the promised son, Jacob, born by Sarah. Isaac, by Sarah. So God aligned himself with Isaac now. So Abraham, Isaac. How many sons does Isaac have? Two. There's Esau and then Jacob, right? And he says, I'm God of Jacob. So he further narrowed his focus. So in doing so, he is telling Moses that you are a descendant of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and then the patriarchs following. And what God is saying is that I am identifying myself with this line, not the line of Ishmael. He's not the God of everybody in this context. He's not God of, you know, Ishmael, maybe it is. It's not Esau, but he's specifically, he says, I am your God. And I identify, I tie myself to you guys. So, God is very specific in how he tied himself to. And it's the same way that God ties himself to us. We are also his people. Whoever is the descendants of Abraham. Who are the descendants of those people who have the same faith as Abraham? So now God ties himself to you. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? When God ties himself to you, or when you tie to God? A lot of people are. I don't know. You know, you look at the life of Israelites, the Jews, they have a hard life, I'm telling you. The sufferings and all that. 6 million people killed during the Second World War, during the Holocaust. That's God's people. God subject his people to slaveries, hardships. You want to be God's people? Oh, I don't know. In the middle, like be what? Not so tight. Not so tight. But I'm telling you, the only reason the Jewish people survive in this world, you know, this whole world, there's only about 20 million Jews. Maybe 25 million Jews. That's about the population of California. And the population of Taiwan. Whole world. Put them all together. That's how many. And look how many people trying to eliminate them. Even from the Bible. During the time of Esther. Remember Haman's and all that? They trying to eliminate the Jews. Then not to mention recent memories. The only reason the Jew can survive millennia millennium, talking about millennia of years, it's because of God. Because of God. Chinese die, at least 20 million people during Second World War, during famine. Second World War, at least that many Chinese die. But we have so many, so 20 million doesn't mean much. But the Jew, 20 million means none. If you kill 20 million Jews today, there won't be any Jew left. But God protects them. That means that God is aligning himself with the Jew to their faith. God will not allow his people to be distinguished, to disappear. And God always comes to their rescue. Always comes to their rescue. So God aligned himself to you too. You know, we just read in Romans chapter 8, who can separate us from the love of God? And then he lists a bunch of stuff, right? He lists could death, sword, anything, can that separate us from the love of God? No. You know why? Because he aligned himself with you. Let me read that to you. I mean, then you can appreciate what does that mean. Who can separate us from the love of Christ? Shall trouble or hardship or persecutions or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? For I am convinced that neither death nor life, neither angel or demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any power, neither height nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God. That means God aligned himself to you. That he loves you, just like he loves the Jews, and came to rescue him. Okay, so this is why God chose the Jews, and he very selectively chose them. And then God tells Moses that he has seen, he has heard the plight, the cry of the Jews. This is in verse 8. So this is, you know, God hears, God sees, God knows. God did not sit on the throne, get a report from the angel. Says, okay, you know, your people is suffering there. He hears. He hears your voice. He hears the cry of Moses' mom. He hears the whiplash on his people's back. He heard the cry of his son when he's crucified on the cross. He hears, he sees. Then he acts. So I'm just saying that hearing and seeing is just a way that it describes to us how God is personal to us. That he is a personal God. He is not a God getting report from someone else and said, oh, okay, now I know. God knows. And Moses responded, then God told him, you know, go, I'm sending you. And Moses responds, says, you know, who am I that I should go? Conveniently forgot the first part, I will be with you. I will be with you. Moses says, you know, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? Does he mean that who am I, such unworthy worms, to be of your service. Does that what he mean? Who am I? Is that the context that says, who am I? I'm so unworthy that you will use me. Somebody says, yeah, that's what he means. Anybody else has a different interpretation of that phrase, who am I? I think Moses probably conjure up that he has a murder case against him in Egypt. So people at that time probably still survived, and now he goes back and murderer and came back and says, okay, God sent me to take you guys out. There is seems to be a lack of credibilities there. I think Moses is more concerned about his own credibility by doing this assignment than about his own unworthiness yet. And then God said to him in verse 12, the sign. I think by our definition of sign, and also there's biblical examples of signs, right? Gideon, when God told him to fight against the Canaanites, and then he's not sure. So he asked for a sign about the fleece, the dew on the fleece, and all that. And then God answered him. So God gave him that sign. He asked for a sign. Do you guys ask for a sign? Yeah. My wife did. Before he decided for certain that she's going to marry me, she asked for the sign. God, give me a sign. So, like I said, we ask sign because we are not certain about the future. Right? We want to be certain. So that's what we ask sign. But the sign that God is giving, telling Moses, I'm going to give you a sign. This is the sign. After you take everybody out. This is the sign. Andrew said it. It's a reminder. It's a reminder of what? It's a reminder that God has done what he said he will do. God has shown through that whole Exodus to show that he aligned himself with the people. God has used that whole Exodus. We have to look at the whole Exodus as a sign. Is that God showed his power, his amazing love, and his faithfulness to his promise. That is who God is in this event of Exodus. So, yes, God wants what? This sign, God wants Moses to realize for sure that he is who he is. I am who I am. He wants Israel to know that generation who came out to know that. They see how God works, the pillar of cloud, the pillar of fire, and open up the Red Sea for them to walk through. He wants the whole Israel to know him. This is the God. This is your God. This is your God. But more important, he is thinking about generation and generations after them. You and me. You know, even for Israelite, even for the Jews, they talk about this event a lot. Whenever they, you know, when the prophet rebuked them for their lack of faith, prophet bring them back to this event. This Exodus, this sign. This is a sign for you who God is. So it's for generation like us that we come to appreciate who this God is. I am. I am. I done it. I say, this is what I will do. I'll did it. So in this event, God is glorified. For generations and generations, we can always point back to this sign. You know, the cross is a sign. Cross is a sign. This is a sign. So that you can always come back and remember. Remember what the great things that he has done on the cross for you. The broken body, the shed blood for you. You can always come back to that and see the glory of God. See the glory of God. That's no wonder. Jesus, before he went on the cross, he says, Father, it is now the time. It is the time that you glorify your Son so your Son can glorify you on the cross. So you know, the Exodus and the cross are very similar spiritually. Exodus and the cross, very similar. Because what? Rescue and the glory of God. In both events, they are pivotal to a new life. For the Jews, that's the beginning of a nation building. And for us, through the cross, it's the beginning of a new life for you. And who knows, your generation, your new life may produce many, many more new lives. So that is why we say Exodus and the cross, the event, the sign of Exodus and the sign of cross is parallel in that way. So God's way of giving you a sign is not just to boost your confidence and to boost your faith in the Lord. But it's also serve to remind you of the event that he says he will do. And he did it. And then, this is another question. Remember I talked to you about the, invading another land and kick everybody out. But here, look at verse 18 to especially 21. No, well, let's say verse 20. Chapter 3, verse 20. This is what he would do to the Egyptians. I will stretch out my hand and strike the Egyptians with all the wonders that I will perform among them. After that, he will let you go. Now, all the Egyptians, not just Pharaoh, all the Egyptians are collateral damage to Pharaoh's what? Refusal. God says, I'm going to destroy Egypt. In fact, he did destroy Egypt. But look at what happened. And I will make the Egyptian favorably disposed towards this people, so that when you leave, you will not go empty-handed. Every woman is to ask her neighbor and any woman living in her house for articles of silver and gold and for clothing, which you will put on your sons and daughter. And so you will plunder the Egyptians. Come on! It's not enough to destroy the nations. You're going to make the nation poor for generations and generations. That's what God says. You guys have no problem. You guys have no problem with that. Daniel, any problem with that? No problem. Why? I don't know. You know,
slavery. Huh?
It's what? Oh, wage of slave. God is being fair. It says, all these years you work for free, so now I'm going to give you back your wages. That's what she said. So God is fair. But that's her interpretations. Okay, 400 years of slavery, wages. You have no problem with that. Not only, it's not enough to destroy Egypt, but you have to plunder him. Get all the wealth. Basically, just take all the wealth of Egypt and then move it to the Jews. I have no answers why God does what he does. I don't know. You know, the more I read Exodus, the more I am puzzled about what God, who God is. Who God is. It does not give me my sense of justice. Let me read another one for you, okay? Another. This is in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is written just before they went into the Promised Land. Remember, they did not go into the Promised Land directly. It took them 40 years to get there. So they were in the wilderness for 40 years. And this now, they're in the eve of, God says, you can go now. You can go into the Promised Land. This is what God says. He tells the Hebrew nations. He tells the Hebrew people. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbol on your hands and bind them on your forehead. Write them on the door frame of your house and on your gates. When the Lord your God bring you into the land he sworn to your father, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob to give you, a land with large flourishing cities you did not build, houses filled with all kinds of good things you did not provide, wells you did not dig, and vineyard and olive groves you did not plant. Then when you eat and are satisfied, be careful that you do not forget the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, out of land of slavery. Fear the Lord your God, serve him only, and take your oath in his name. Do not follow other gods, the gods of the people around you. Remember? I say Exodus is the first event for God to build a nation, to build a nation. And this verse here is 40 years later. They are already like nations. And Moses is reminding them, this is who God is. This is God's purpose. He take you to there. He take you, give you the land. He give you the houses, give you the vineyard, give you the fig tree, all because of God. That's who God is. And God wants to use the Hebrew, the Jews, to show the world that if you belong to him, this is what he is. This is who he is. He is faithful. He loves. And so you love him back. You want to be his friend. You don't want to be his enemies. That is what God is showing us, showing the Jews. So the people of the world come to see God through Israel. Come to know God through Israel. And Israel come to know God through Exodus. You see now, you put the Exodus in the proper framework. That's what Exodus is. There's still more things to come that you don't understand what God is doing. I did not give you an answer. I don't know why God, what about all these displaced people? What about all alone? I don't think God gave me an answer. But I see God's answer for the Jews. You don't forget about me. I did this. So don't you forget about Jesus Christ, what he did here. Let's pray. Thank you, Jesus.